my good friend Al. Hey, Al, how's it going?
You mean I'm not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Is that what you're...
It sounds like what you're saying. I'm pushing to get you nominated.
Okay. I thought I was already in. You know, yesterday I was listening to Beth Hart and Josh Stone and some of those, so I should be in. Man, they are just so excellent. We should get in for being listeners, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you would be...
listen and say...
On my list, Al, you are my Hall of Fame, up right up there.
Wow, good. I'm gonna stride the earth like a colossus. It's a top 10 day. The sun is kind of peeking out in a bit. I want to thank everybody at the Le Sueur County Historical Society that met in Lee Center, the Ellendale mural fundraiser at United Methodist Church in Ellendale. They're putting some beautiful murals up. I love murals. And thanks to everybody at the Meadowlark Prairies Outdoor Lab in St. James who walked with me on Earth Day, and also the kids from St. Paul's Lutheran School who walked with me also yesterday. And it was a lovely day with a lot of nice people. And if you've never been to Meadowlark Prairies Outdoor Lab in St. James, on this coming Saturday from 11 to 1, they're going to do some walks there. There's 2 miles of trails. Dale Headland will be leading, will be talking, When Trees Talk is what he's going to be talking about. And Tom Garretts will be doing Fishing with Goldenrod, which sounds, goldenrod is one of my favorite plants. They are insect zoos. 4-H wildflower pollinator ambassadors are planting wildflowers, land management, soil and water staff planting trees. And Jacob Dearborn will be there from Pheasants Forever. So it's just a lovely place, and it's right in St. James. I believe it's 18 acres. I hope I've got that right. It's got to be close. You know, life can... Yesterday was so windy. We're out there looking for birds, and we saw big birds, you know, Canada geese and red-tail hawks and mallards and that sort of thing. Kingfisher was sounding off all the time. But the little birds, it was just so windy for them. It just has to be kind of miserable when they have to fight wind. Of course, we had chickadees and field sparrows and song sparrows. So I always say one bird is all it takes to make a walk for me. But as a walk leader, you always want to see more. Life can be like... you know that child steering wheel on a shopping cart in a supermarket where the kid's just turning that wheel? And it really doesn't take him where he wants to go, but he's still doing that. But, you know, every day is a gift, and looking at birds is an excellent way to unwrap that gift. I take in the feeders at night here, though, because of rampaging and pillaging done by raccoons. And someone, I know I've answered this before, but somebody said, why do raccoons have black masks? It's so they can watch an eclipse. I didn't realize that till now, but it's to help them see better, reduces glare. But each morning, I return those feeders to their proper places, and sometimes I get the feeling that something is watching me in the yard. We've all had that feeling. That's because something is always watching us. And to many creatures, I look like an unsavory character. So what's watching? Squirrels? Blue jays, for sure. And they keep an eye on me in case I put out peanuts in a shell, which allows them the opportunity to perform the magic act of appearing out of nowhere and causing the goobers to disappear. I was driving around a little bit on my way from St. James and back, looking at some lakes, and I just pretended I was a duck for a while. I don't know if anybody's ever done that. You shouldn't do it when you're driving, probably. But one look at a lake, and a duck said, what a dive. Because we have diving ducks in Minnesota, and they're the canvasback, redhead, ringneck. Some people will probably know them as ringbills, scaup. They're also called bluebills, what else, goldeneye, bufflehead, and ruddy duck. And arriving home, I tossed a handful of purple grapes onto the ground. It was kind of a freezing day, and I didn't quarter them. The robins ate them with obvious pleasure, and they quartered it all on their own. So these are the not to real little grapes either. They were sizable, but I watched them, and they would eat, and they would fly away with them, and they just seemed overjoyed. Donna Swenson is seeing sandhill cranes. She lives in Waseca, rural Waseca. Clarence Holm of Ormsby, Minnesota, said, "My daughter Kelsey really enjoys camping and photography. She recently completed visiting every one of Minnesota State parks. A few weeks ago, she visited the Sac Zem Bog and took some photos." And they were, Kelsey said, "White-winged crossbill was one the birders were looking for. They do pop up in the woods in northern Minnesota. There just weren't many sightings when I was there, but she had some lovely photos of one. She also had great pictures of a snowy owl and a northern hawk owl." Oh, I love seeing northern hawk owls. And, of course, everybody loves seeing snowy owls. She said other new ones that I didn't get a picture of were a great gray owl, black-backed woodpecker, boreal chickadees, and Canada jays. And Kelsey, you're not the only one that didn't get a picture of a great gray owl. It's, oh, I can't remember the year. There was one year where you just about tripped over them when you were up there. They were just everywhere. We'd stand in one spot and see a dozen. But most years, they're pretty hard to see. Kim Williams of Heartland, her son took a photo of a leucistic house sparrow.
Hmm.
And it was kind of piebald-like. Jocelyn saw some black-necked stilts at the Wells water treatment ponds. And Diane Smith of New Richland sent a photo of a leucistic robin that had kind of that piebald look also.
Now, do they look kind of sickly? When I've seen the leucistic pictures, they always look kind of sickly to me. Maybe it's just because you're not used to seeing like that. Are they sick in any way, or are they, their immune system, or are they just a genetic thing?
It's a genetic thing, and I think most of them are all right.
Okay.
They might have some problems. I think of, like, white squirrels. If you're a gray squirrel, you run up the gray bark of a tree, and then you freeze in place so a hawk or something can't see you. Well, you're not a gray squirrel. You're a bright white squirrel, so you stick up like a sore thumb. So the hawk says, "Well, that looks like a white squirrel there. I think I'll take him out for lunch." So there can be some. Is there some problems maybe as far as finding a mate? You know, that could be. You might run into, if you're a male and you got white spots on you, the female might say, "I don't know, you know, that's, that doesn't look anything like my dad look like." So that might be a problem. But I think for the most part, of course, anytime, you know, when you talk about albinos, sometimes there's eye problems and things with that.
Mm.
But I think leucistic, for the most part, they're probably all right. There's just some feathers have and odd plumage that just makes them look different. But for us, they're just really cool to see. We just love to see them. It's something different than having white where it should not have white. It's just a lovely thing to see. It, you know, it's impossible not to be impressed by birds, no matter what. Yesterday, I watched a chickadee. He's starting to excavate a nest cavity. And chickadees have this tiny little bill. It's really, really little. But he turned it into like a Swiss Army knife or a jackhammer or something. An interesting fact, everything on Earth is either a chickadee or not a chickadee. It's true. You can look that up. So they just make my day when I see them. A nice listener said, "I've been listening for years, Al. First time I've ever sent a question." Well, it's about time. We've been waiting for you. What do you do about lady beetles, box elder bugs, and stink bugs in your house in the spring?
Oof.
For the most part, I ignore them. They're trying to find an exit. My wife will tell you I have a little tube-like thing, a little plastic tube, and I can knock them in that, and then I let them go outdoors.
Oh.
I know not everybody does that, but you know, they're just trying to make a living, so I let them go. They're trying to get out, so they don't want to be in here. They want to get out, so that's why we see them on windows and things now, because they're trying to find a crack somewhere. So they're going to get out, and in a perfect world, they'd all be out of there by now, and I know that's not true. I think the box elder bugs are pretty much out. I don't see any of them wandering around anymore, but there's still some lady beetles, just saying. I don't remember how I got in here. You know, I should have written that down or something. So they're still trying to get out. A listener asked, what is the rarest animal in the world? Hmm. I would have to say it's the one that's yet to be discovered by man. So I have no idea what it is, but there's still things out there. There's so many beetles that have not been named or described, so it could be a beetle. Who knows what it is? There's a lot of rare things out there.
Well, one thing about beetles they kind of all look alike to me, so if you did discover a new one, how would you really know it was a new one unless you really knew what you were talking about? Because a lot of times I'll see bugs and I think they're another one, because it's just the kind of thing, I guess, unless you're really an expert, you really couldn't tell.
Yep, that's right. And entomologists are out there on the front lines and identifying these things because, that's just like hitting a Grand Slam home run to win the World Series, to find a beetle that just has never been described before. So it's a great thing for them, and boy, I'm glad they're all out there looking for them. We saw sulfur butterflies, morning cloaks, and a lot of red admiral butterflies yesterday, and we saw a lot of darner dragonflies, the big ones. So they were flying around in the wind, you know, no matter how strong that wind was. Morning cloaks and red admirals, they seemed to find a little hidden area kind of in the wooded part where they could get out of the wind. The little sulfurs, they're out in the grass flying around looking for flowers, which there were not a whole lot of flowers there, dandelions, but they're out there looking. Somebody asked, I think it was yesterday, are cabbage white butterflies pollinators? And the cabbage whites are the ones that produce cabbage worms.
Yeah.
The cabbage white butterflies, it's a non-native species. It was introduced to the U.S. in the 1800s. I don't know why. I'm hoping it was accidentally. But the velvety green caterpillars, they specialize in eating cold crops like cabbage, kale, and broccoli. And cold crops, as we all know, they're typically cool season crops that belong to the mustard family. But the adult butterflies, they nectar on flowers, and they're good pollinators. So they're out there doing their job. But as a gardener, especially as a vegetable gardener, I'm not always real happy to see them,
There's nothing more gross than when you pick a thing of broccoli and all of a sudden you put it in the water and there's little worms that float up. You go, oh, yuck, yeah, that's not my favorite thing at all. There's something about if you put a cover on before the butterflies go around and lay those eggs that you can maybe help prevent that, but I've never got the timing quite right.
I've never done it either. I just hand-pick them, it seems. Boy, do they grow. There's a little dot, and then like in a day, there's this huge worm on there. And
yep.
It's the same guy. They're just eating machines. And I like a lot of cold crops. I love cabbage. And they just can eat so much of it. But I guess that's why we have to raise a lot of cabbage if we like cabbage, because otherwise we have to give a little bit for them to let them eat, so they have those little butterflies that fly around and help pollinate things too. So I guess there's a good and a bad side to them, like there is to so many things in the world. How many young does a beaver have? Oh, we were looking for beaver yesterday. We didn't see any, but we know they were there. They have a mating season that runs, they're done now, from November to March. And the kits are born in May or June, so they're coming right up now. And I believe there's an average of like 3 or 4. I saw a beaver on a bike trail that I was walking down. It was gigantic. Beavers weigh 40 to 50 pounds on average when they're an adult. And this thing was a big adult, and it just kind of looked at me and said, gave me that little chin up in the air, like, guys are, we do that a lot, men. We just kind of give it that little, it's an up nod is what it is. But this, an adult beaver can chew through in a 6-inch tree in 15 minutes. And you might say, well, that doesn't seem like a lot. Well, try chewing through a 6-inch tree and see how long it takes you. 15 minutes they can go through that.
Wow.
And that's why in a lot of park areas and things now, you'll see like there's a fence around a tree. And sometimes it's attached right to the tree. And that's to keep the beavers from chewing them down and dragging it out and putting it in their lodge. So they have the beaver lodge that meets nightly. They're one of the most active lodge. You know, you got the moose lodge and things, but boy, the beaver, they're an active lodge. So I still like seeing them. There's something about seeing a beaver that just it's fun. But this one was he was huge. I wouldn't have wanted to have messed with him, because he put a halt to my walk for a while, because he was kind of right in the middle of the trail. And I said, oh, I think I'm going to just wait till this guy decides what he wants to do. But he just gave me that look and then waddled on, because he did waddle. He was a waddler. There are, I saw some mergansers yesterday, and someone asked, do these guys nest in cavities, like in trees? And not all mergansers, not quite. Common mergansers nest in natural tree cavities. They all don't nest around here. But they nest in natural tree cavities or holes carved out by large woodpeckers like pileated or pileated. Sometimes they'll nest in nest boxes, provided the entrance hole is large enough. They might use rock crevices, holes in the ground, hollow logs, old buildings, chimneys. Hooded mergansers, we get here some, because they readily nest in boxes. So if a wood duck box, sometimes I see a wood duck with baby wood ducks and baby hooded mergansers. The red-breasted mergansers nest on the ground along forested river banks, marsh edges, lake shores, coastal islands, or sandy shores. Mergansers are often called fish ducks, and hunters, I guess they have a disdain for them because of the taste. They're not a popular duck for hunting, and I know that I say that there's some people out there that probably think that's the best eating duck on earth, but for the most part, they don't like them because they just don't have the best taste. So there's no point shooting them if you're not going to eat them. So mergansers are safer than most ducks when it comes to hunting season. And I'm sure they promote that somehow and saying, we're eating more fish all the time, so just leave us alone. here's a funny question from somebody. In a nutshell, tell me what a walnut is. Yeah, let's say yes, next question. Walnuts are the round, single-seed stone fruits of a walnut tree. I have, a couple of walnut trees here in the yard, and I watch the squirrels bury them, and then I watch another squirrel come along and dig up the walnut, carry it somewhere else, and rebury it. So I'm wondering how many times some of those walnuts have been reburied. They just keep moving around the yard, and the squirrels are aware that somebody is stealing their walnuts, so they will sometimes fake burying one and then move on, because then I'm sure they're chuckling because they said that knuckle-headed Norman, now he'll come along and dig that up and he'll say, where's the walnut? So, and we'll be up in a tree laughing at him. So it's they have to keep an eye out for other squirrels. And when it comes to burying acorns and things, then they have to worry about blue jays, because blue jays are watching the squirrels and saying, boy, you buried an acorn, and they'll fly down, just peck it out and fly off with it. So it's fun watch. You know, a party of blue jays, that's a perfect name for them, too. I think a scold maybe is better, but a party, because they were in the yard this morning and making, they just, there were two of them there, and they were just making all kinds of noise. And they were likely celebrating a hatch day of one jay, so they don't have a birthday, they have a hatch day. So I'm guessing one was celebrating that, and the other one was just saying, happy hatch day to you. So I'm guessing they are a pair, because they seemed to get along fine. They didn't have the crest go up, because when they're upset about something, then the crest will raise, so they get a long haircut all of a sudden when they're upset by something. But there's so many things, and we marveled yesterday with a class over dandelions, and I told about how we used to eat dandelions fairly regularly, and conversation got to dandelion wine. I think I tried it once. I know a lot of folks make dandelion wine. I don't remember going, wow, this is incredible. So it must have tasted like, I shouldn't say this, but must have tasted like most homemade wines. And no. I don't mean that in a derogatory way, because it's good, but a lot of them taste pretty similar, and I don't have a discriminating palate, so I can say, boy, I can detect just a bit of oak in this and that sort of thing. Some people can, and more power to them. I even had a sip. One of my college roommates, his brother made wine out of everything, I think cardboard and everything else. Oof. We had a sip of corn wine, but he just gave us a little bit, because he was saving it for better company than us. So he just gave us a little. And I don't remember saying, I can detect a little bit of corn. I think this was a DeKalb product that you used in here. So, but it was, we were college students, so wine was wine. And but it was, I know people that make wonderful homemade wine. They just, I guess they'd never share it with me, and I don't blame them. So.
Well, my dad always said, look up, he always, to discourage us from drinking alcohol. My parents didn't drink. He said, well, look up fermented. He goes, that's what alcohol is, fermented. It means spoiled or rotten. And he says, you see that high moisture corn from the harvester that fell on the floor over there, or in the ground over there? And, you know, you kind of smell it, because it was kind of moist in its own juice there, and it was sort of fermenting. And he goes, that's what alcohol is. He goes, if you want, you just pick up that hand of that corn on the ground that's spoiled in there, and that's what alcohol is. And so guess what, I never really wanted to try it.
Yeah, and silage always had that kind of smell.
Yeah.
Too, kind of the alcohol smell. And I say my dad had a drink of whiskey. He said one drink when he was 23 or something, decided he didn't like it, never had another one. And my mother never had a drink in her life, but she could smell a beer on the breath of a son at I'd say 2 miles away, probably.
Yep.
She could, because she'd always say, what have you been doing? And you didn't want to spill your guts and everything, but she knew, so there was no secret kept there. But it's amazing that I remember going over the neighbors, Joe Holland and Larry Holland, the son was a friend of mine, so we're over there and we're baling hay or walking bean rows or something, and we go in to have something to eat, because the mom, Virgie, was just, everybody seemed to be a good cook, so she was just feeding us like she was readying us for market. And then we went down the basement. I think we were going to play, I think it was called an Agamco. It was a baseball game that you played with dice during our noon break. We were going to have a game. And Larry went over to get something out of the down in the basement refrigerator and open it, and it was completely filled with Ham's beer cans, the whole thing. And I went over and looked at it. If I'd had a cell phone, I'm sure I would have taken a picture of it, because I'd never seen anything like that. My uncles and things didn't drink either, and I couldn't believe that somebody could have an entire bar, like, in their basement. It was just, and I liked the Ham's beer commercials with the Ham's bear.
Yep.
And he was so famous that the Minneapolis paper would actually print the times that Hamm's beer commercials were going to run and on what stations they were running on, so people could make that something that was a watchable event that they would mark down on their calendars, I suppose, to watch those. And it was fun. It was from the land of sky blue water. And boy, it was, but it's funny how these certain things stick in your mind, and that's one of them, seeing all that ham. It was more Hamm's beer than I knew was in existed in. Go out, I think I talked about it last week, I pick up beer cans from the ditch because there's a stop sign not far from us, so I think people throw the beer cans out when they hit the stop sign because they get on a busier road then. And it's Busch Light is ours here. And
okay.
I don't know if it's the cheapest or what it is, but Busch Light is the beer of choice for people that are driving down our road. So I pick them up. And
Al, I've got a couple of texts here I wanted to share with
sure.
you. One says, good morning, Karen. Could you please ask Al today if he could explain the difference between a red-headed finch and a red pole? I'm having bird identification issues in North Mankato. Thanks. Says, thank you.
Hey, well, thank you for writing. The ones you're probably seeing now are more than likely a house finch, although you could be seeing purple finches. I did not get any red poles this year at all, and more's a pity. I love them. I just talked to a friend from Duluth that said, just getting a bunch of them in now, hadn't had them all year, so are all winter, and just happy to see them. So they are beautiful. The house finch and the purple finch look very much alike. The house finch is the one that nests here. It looks, it can be even kind of orangish, but it's red. The male is red, where the purple finch looks like you took a house finch and rolled him around in wine, red wine, Merlot or something. And so it makes them look different. There is, on the females, the purple finch has like an eyebrow, a white eyebrow. That's a big difference. But again, if in the summertime we have house finches here, they're the ones that nest here. The difference between the three birds, red poles, they're more like a goldfinch. Purple finches are larger. They have heavier bills. The common red pole, if you look at that, it has tiny, tiny little bill. And it's just, there'd be one of those birds that we would classify as cute. You look at them and you just say, oh, what a lovely little bird. And red poles are white on the breast, where our house finches and purple finches are striped on the breast. So that's the easiest. But size is different. The finches are bigger than the red poles. And they're all beautiful. The red poles are actually finches, but they make little electric zapping call notes. And they're active foragers. They travel in busy flocks, so you'll more likely see a red pole in a flock than either of the other two finches. And they're little small. These red poles go way up in the Arctic tundra. They're just lovely little birds. So maybe next year we'll have a bunch.
And then I've got another text from our friend John in New Ulm. He says, almost comedy. I know someone who works in the complaint department. When he's not working, he spends a lot of time complaining about the complaints he gets at work. I never knew complaining was recyclable. Till next time, have a good day and a better tomorrow, John. There you go.
And John, I bet that's true of so many. If you listen to complaints all day, you're probably going to go home and just say, oh, you would not believe what happened today, and then complain about the complainers. I guess that would be a natural part of your job, is you'd have to share those complaints. So thanks, John. It's always wonderful to hear from you. I want to thank everybody for sitting on the front porch with us. Man, I I was at a visitation the other day. This wasn't one. I do want to say before I forget, Tom Kiner, who was a friend, a longtime friend from Janesville, who was a dentist there forever, passed away recently. And Doc and Dot, we birded together in Minnesota and Texas and everywhere else. And he was just a wonderful man. And I was at his funeral the other day. But this is at another one. I was at a visitation. And I snaked through a long line to shake hands. You've probably all been there. You shake hands, you hug people. Sometimes you're not certain, at least I'm not, who all I hug. And so I just say, can I give you a hug? And then you try to say appropriate words to a dead friend's kin. And the words are never enough, but you know, sometimes you just say, I'm sorry, I'm glad I knew him. But as I was leaving, I saw that another member of the deceased family had entered the room. Oh, you know, and I knew him. So what do? I get back in line and went around again. I placed a mint. It was a bereaved mint in my mouth in case I had morning breath, morning with a U in it, of course. Why did I get way back at the end of the line? Why didn't I just butt ahead and say, nah, I was already through here. I just want to say. It was because my mother told me never to cut in line. She said, Alan, nobody will like you if you cut in line. So thanks to Mom's advice, it took me, twice as long to get through the visitation, but it was worth it to talk to those wonderful people. Remember, folks, Heartland is always driving past. I enjoyed your company. Get out there and do something wild today. Look at a bird. Karen, have your best day ever.
You too. Thanks, Al. We'll talk to you later. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.